happy Thursday. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, the post-electoral version of the show. Although we're not going to talk a lot of politics today. I think most folks are pretty well politicked out following a pretty contentious situation and certainly one of the longest ballots that ever faced folks here in Florida's capital city area. My gosh, that thing seemed about 20 pages long, even though it was just one side and then the other side, but a lot of issues and candidates to keep track of and all that. But we may get into a little bit of that today, but probably not too much. We have other fish to fry, as the saying goes. 414-1234, the local number. Twixt you and us, and the long distance number is 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks a lot for tuning in today. A little lesson here for you. Florida divided geographically into 20 judicial circuits, as well as 67 counties, and a host of other ways that we keep track of where we are and who does what to whom. Here in the second judicial circuit, we have about 300,000 folks in the six counties of Leon, Franklin, Gadsden, Jefferson, Liberty, and Wakulla. And the state constitution mandates that the state attorney is the prosecuting officer of all circuit and county trial courts. And if you grew up at a certain point in time, you remember Mr. District Attorney. And I think that had to do with California or something.
Right,
but
right.
Yeah, but here it's state attorney in Florida, and everything from traffic crimes like DUI and reckless driving or felonies, misdemeanors, all kinds of cases here have to go through the state attorney's office. And here in our area, first elected to the job in 1985, a fellow by the name of Willie Meigs has been this district state attorney. And in the wake of this week's election, during which the voters in the six counties elected is number two, Assistant State Attorney Jack Campbell, to succeed Mr. Meigs. We welcome the outgoing State Attorney to Perspectives. Willie, it is an honor to see you again, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, sir.
And I guess, what, the pressure's off now, huh?
Well, I kind of enjoyed this election cycle more than anyone in the recent past, yes.
I bet so, yeah. But I heard that there was a grand celebration of sorts down at your office there with Jack coming on deck there. And even though Pete Williams, the Republican opponent, had a pretty hefty campaign there, it was Jack who came out on top. And so he will be slipping into your office here pretty shortly.
Absolutely. It was just a joyous day in the state attorney's office yesterday, knowing that I really feel like we're leaving it in good hands, and the things that we've done will continue. Jack's maybe a little more innovative than me, but he's certainly more computer savvy and technologically much better. But I hope he'll keep some of the things that we have in place. I'm going to talk to him about it. If you call our office, you won't get voicemail. You'll talk to someone. Now, they may not know what they're saying, but you will talk to some person that at least you can argue back with, and rather than talking to a machine. So I just purposed in my mind that we were not going to have that you, when you call the state attorney's office, you're going to get a live person.
Well, that is one thing that is, I don't want to say a holdover from the old days, but it is increasingly rare in this technologically advanced age that you don't go through the press one for this and press two for that. And every time you do call the state attorney's office, you can talk to someone direct. But you talk about a legacy and experience going back years and years. Now, your resume reads like the ultimate old-time Tallahassean here, graduate of Leon High School. You go into TPD. You also worked the sheriff's office, then back to TPD, eventually TCC, Florida State University, and then assistant state attorney in 1976, and then elected for the first time as state attorney in 1985. The changes you have seen over those years, particularly since being a patrol officer at TPD, it's just incredible.
You know, it really is. I was walking the beat downtown as a police officer when they were tearing down the block where the legislative wing of the Capitol is now located as they were building the new Capitol. I watched that structure go up. I watched them tear down all of those buildings there in that block. People don't remember it, but we had Holland's restaurant there. There was a grocery store, Bob's Grocery on Adams Street. I can remember walking in there. I didn't take an apple off his apple rack out front, but, used to spend time there. And the stores had wooden floors and the M&M Cafe in the morning. Coffee was a nickel. Now Starbucks is $5. I don't know what it costs. I don't go to Starbucks, but it's cost a lot, and you get a cup of coffee for a nickel. And I remember when I was working for $1 an hour when I was first started school, filing lien satisfactions down at Department of Motor Vehicle, we could go eat a full meal for 75 cents. And a big tip was a dime.
A dime, yep, that's for sure. Well, one of the things that I was thinking back to, when we first moved down here, which was in 1979, I was working at a radio station across town. We had, that was a country station. That was an AM station, the old WTNTA, and we had a morning man by the name of Bobby Lyles back in the day.
I remember him well.
Oh, my gosh. And old Bobby, that was in the time when AM radio stations, well, FM too, because it cost you doggone much money, they'd shut down at midnight. You didn't have any audience between midnight and 6 anyway. Good, God-fearing folks were in bed at that time.
Right.
But you'd always kick off the morning show with some kind of signature. And Bobby Lyles' signature song that he used for years and years there was the Duane Eddy version of Dixie. And he would play that right at 6 o'clock as soon as the station signed on the air. And there was one, I will not mention his name, but there was one Tallahassee police officer to show the difference in the way that we approach life today vis-a-vis then, would pull down into what was then the business area of Frenchtown. And there was a pool hall, and there was a liquor store, and there's all kinds of stuff down there, as you remember back then. And this officer would wait until that song came on, and he would key his microphone, stick it on the speaker where the radio was blasting, and that would come out over his PA system on top of the cop car, if nothing else, just to kind of infuriate the residents of that area. And that shows, that there was a little bit less of a, shall we say, a happy relationship between some members of the community and law enforcement and the law, the judicial community back in the day. That has changed, too. You could not do that today.
A lot has changed. A lot has changed.
And do you think maybe sometimes that was something that was unfairly kind of dropped at your doorstep? I have talked to some folks that said, oh, my gosh, you talk about, the charges of rigged was thrown around on this election. But the fact that some folks in the community thought that they got a raw deal from law enforcement and the state attorney's office and everyone else, and that the purpose of the whole system was just to throw black folks in jail. You still hear that today.
Well, you do, and I don't want to make a bunch of self-serving statements, but I've told this many, many times over. One of the cases that I was probably the most proud of, we ended up not winning it, but it was a murder case. An elderly black man was killed by a group of thugs. They robbed him and beat him to death, basically. We had to try that case. I believe we ended up trying it 4 times before we lost it. The bottom line is could have dropped it much earlier, and nobody would have ever said a word. We kept getting hung juries. Didn't have a lot of evidence. The evidence was not great. That's the kind of case you should be trying, the ones that need to be tried. The ones where you have overwhelming evidence, most of those enter a plea. But Dave Lewis was one of our assistant state attorneys, and he tried that case. Finally, I think he lost it on the 4th try. But how many more times were we going to try it? We were going to try it till we won it or lost it. And no one, no family, nobody cared, would have cared, but we cared. And so I cared about the death of a black man that probably no one else cared a thing in the world about. And so and when I hear those things that we're throwing young black people in jail and don't care about them, that infuriates me, because that simply is not true, just not true.
We're talking to Willie Meggs, the outgoing state attorney for the Second Judicial Circuit of Florida. Let's see if we can get in a phone call here before the next break. Mark's on line one. Hey, Mark, welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning. Actually, it's Mike Simpson. Good morning,
Mike. Oh, Mike. Yeah, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Mike.
Very good. Very good. I wanted to, first of all, I think I've got to offer you a correction. The election was in 84 because I just met my wife, and I remember you being out at Tom Brown Park with the hot air balloon.
Fourth of July.
And if I recall correctly, that's 32 years. That's 8 terms you've been in office. But you've had a very good run. You've got a wonderful set of accomplishments, and I just wanted to congratulate you and wish you the best of luck in retirement.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate that.
And we will stand corrected there. Of course, you're elected here on a even year. And so you took office then in 85.
Took office in 85, and I've been fortunate enough. You know, it's kind of interesting, the state attorney's office, and you can tell that by our pictures that we have in the lobby of each one of our offices, goes back to 1898. And there's only been until, beginning in January, there will only have been 7 state attorneys in 119 years in this Second Judicial Circuit. And I'm just real pleased to have been one of those 6 state attorneys, and now 7.
Well, that's one of the old-fashioned ways, too. You look at things like David Harvey, sheriff of Wakulla County, for how many years down right there. And now this year, you just said before we got started here, you got this wholesale change in the constitutional officers down at the courthouse now in this go-around.
It's going to be different. It's going to be different. We have a new clerk, a new property appraiser, a new public defender, new state attorney, new supervisor of election. So the constitutional officers have indeed changed.
Yeah, not to mention new sheriff who will working with your successor, Jack Campbell, there in the state attorney's office. So we're talking to Willie Meggs here on WFSU-FM's Perspectives, and your participation always welcome and coveted at 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Willie Meggs, the outgoing state attorney for Florida's 2nd Judicial Circuit, here with us. And a reminder that you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to that address, which we hope you retain as a favorite there on your laptop or phone or whatever. Click on radio, pull down the programs menu, click Perspectives, and then you can go back and listen as often as you like. We archive past shows, try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. So, Willie, before we get into regrets, I have a few, but then again, too few to mention. Your favorite cases, the ones you thought, boy, we did a bang-up job on that one.
Well, you know, first off, I will say that the assistant state attorneys, we have 42, I believe, now total. It varies. Someone may have resigned this morning. I don't know. but they're in the courtroom all the time. We usually try between 220 to 250 cases a year, which is a significant amount. I have tried a lot of cases. Being state attorney, it's one of the things Jack's going to have to come to grips with, because he's great in the courtroom. But being state attorney is very difficult to carry a caseload or try too many cases. And so what I found would happen to me when I had a case, you kind of get deeply involved in it. And then someone calls and wants you to be on a radio show. Well, I can't do it. You know, I can't do that. I can't do this. I can't do that. And so it's very difficult for the actual state attorney to do too many cases. But, you know, I have so many that I remember that I personally have done. I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I can remember the details of most of those cases. I remember my first murder case. It was a case where the defendant had been declared incompetent. It was very old by the time I got it, and it involved a fellow killing his girlfriend, shot her with a shotgun and killed her. And it was my first case. I tried it with Judge Rudd. He was the circuit judge that tried it. And it was kind of pretty good, and I got a good result. One of the ones that I was kind of miffed about, tried a murder case, and it was kind of a bizarre case, but the jury came back with, found the defendant guilty of aggravated battery. And I was thinking, my goodness, did I not prove the person was dead? You know, where did they miss that one? But anyway, it was that was a good one. One of them that I tried out of Liberty County was the Chester Coxwell case. Very memorable case for me. Had a lot of issues in it. Had two defendants, including he hired a person to kill someone. And if we had time, I could tell you all the details of it. But I did try the case where a great police officer, Dale Green, was killed and answering a call. Tried that one. And I guess my last big trial was the Nixon case. Was it Nixon? No. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my last trial, actually, the last trial that I did is, I'm still in the process of doing it. It was on an executive assignment, so I've been down in Cross City over in the Third Circuit trying a case on an assignment from the governor to of a sovereign citizen type person. So I just finished it up really back in first part of middle of June of this year. So that was my last trial.
Oh, gosh. And that and you just mentioned, of course, Liberty County, the recent case involving the gentleman who the sheriff over there had cut loose. He didn't have an open carry permit and all of that, and then wound up eventually killing the guy, yeah, or charged with killing the guy who came to visit him that one night. And that, so these can get very complicated.
Well, they can, and most of them have a lot of interesting twists. There's a lot of twists and turns in most of the cases that we do. And, you know, it's kind of funny, as I've tried cases along, the media will be watching the case, and generally the first day, second day, third day, not going all that well. And then the great thing about being in a big trial like that is pulling it all together at the end and making it all make sense. And so I've enjoyed that over the years.
I think folks who have not been through a judicial proceeding, at least a criminal, be it felony or misdemeanor case here that your office handles, may not have any real understanding of how this works from the time that a person is arrested and charged until the final disposition of the case through right. the courts. Of course, many different ways that can go, twixt here and yon, but still, I'm just coming into this country and saying, how does your judicial system work? How do you explain that to them, how that goes on?
Well, you know, a lot of people do not understand it. Personally, I think it's the greatest system in the world to ferret out the truth. It's sometimes very hard to accept a bad verdict, and, you know, you just kind of don't like it. Because I can tell you that if a prosecutor does not believe in what they're doing and believe in the guilt of the person, I've never tried a case that I didn't really truly believe that the person was guilty of the charges that we've had. We don't do that in our office. If we can't prove it, then it's not an experiment. But we feel like if we have the evidence that we can present and we present it in the right fashion, we'll get a good result. A lot of times you don't get that result, and it's kind of frustrating. So there's kind of a thought process that goes through. You'll have this case, and you know, you first look at it and you say, ooh, well, this is not going to be real easy. And then you get to working on it, and you say, I think I've got it. I think I've got this figured out. Then you go into trial and you say, do everything you think you're going to do and want to do, and you come out of it, I think I won this case. And then the jury comes back and they say, not guilty. And then the next day after it, you're hating that jury, and then about a week later, you start saying, wonder why I even thought I could win that case. You know, so it's a process, and that's what will make you kind of get old.
Was it frustrating, too, because with the publicity machine that is out there today, it's always been there, but now it's maybe a little bit more than what we've seen because of the intervention of the public, if you will, through social media and all that, where you have a preponderance of observers, the plain old public out there saying, I just know that that SOB is guilty, and they're just not pushing hard enough, but they don't have access to all the evidence and the process that you as a prosecutor or as the defense attorney had to go through to try to sift all this out to say what is the provable evidence in the case.
Well, and you know, I don't know that I've ever had a had a trial that I didn't have what I call a bump in the road. I don't really think you're doing a trial real well unless you get a bump in the road. And let me give you one real quick example. I was trying a murder case, never forget it, as long as I live, a young man working at a convenience store. And this thug comes in and robs him, shot him in the head, and killed him. His name was Stephen Hardy. And the defendant had his girlfriend in the car. And, of course, we're talking to her, and she's a key witness because he came out with money stuffed in his hand, a gun in his waistband, and she heard the shot. Well, she's a pretty good witness. And as I talked to her the night before trial, I talked to her. We'd done her deposition and all that kind of stuff, and her story stayed consistent and same all the way through. So, as I'm preparing the other witnesses on the morning of trial, she keeps tugging at my sleeve and saying, "I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you." So I said, "Fine. What is it?" And her name was Demita Joelle Williams. I'll never forget her. And I said, "What is it, Demita? What's the matter?" She says, "Everything I told you before was a lie." I said, "No, you can't do that." And we'd already picked the jury, and I was about to go over to make an opening statement. Well, part of my opening statement was what she was going to testify to, and now she's telling me all of that was a lie. Well, I about have a heart attack, and you know, I know the truth, but I don't know. So I think I promised to marry her or something. I can't remember, but I said, "Demita, all I want you to do, I'm going to put you on that stand. I expect you to tell the truth." Well, she went in on the stand and testified exactly like I thought she would and like she had told me she would. That was on Tuesday. On Thursday, after I'd rested my case, the defense calls her back, and she changed that story 180 degrees. And I was able to, and some of this is just sheer luck. I'd like to think I'm a genius prosecutor and know what question to ask. And so when you boil the case down, pretty much she was the case. So I asked her on cross-examination a real quick question. "When did you decide to change your mind?" And her answer was, "When I found out I was the only witness." And a juror just rocked back and said, "Yeah, that's it, that's it." And so then now the real key jury instructions is you can believe a witness's testimony, any part of a witness's testimony, all of it. It is your decision, jury, about what part of it to believe. And they convicted him hands down, and he ended up getting the death penalty, which ended up getting reversed by the Florida Supreme Court. But that was a very serious case, and I'll never forget those details of that.
That is very unusual, I would think, in which you have a key witness in a situation who reverses testimony midstream.
180 degrees. It was just, but I already had enough in so I could argue.
Well, because of the nature of the job, just about all prosecutors have a very close working relationship, of course, with law enforcement. When it came to you and the late, great Sheriff Larry Campbell, that was a very special relationship, wasn't it?
Well, it was. We were both graduates of Leon High School. I've known him since, you hardly know some people when you get to know him. I don't remember knowing him in elementary school, but I do know that I knew him in high school. We were both in the Marine Corps Reserves. and we were friends. Then we became deputy sheriffs together. I worked with him a lot. He about worked me to death when I first started with the sheriff's office because he wasn't married and I was. As I go through my scrapbooks, I have a note that Larry wrote to my wife saying, please excuse Willie, he had to work tonight. And called it a field trip. We were doing a field trip. But I kept a lot of those things. So I have a lot of memories. He worked an awful, awful lot. And, you know, that friendship, we didn't agree all the time about everything. But you know, the Bible tells us that iron sharpens iron. So we mixed it up sometimes, but I think it made us both better people. And I'm proud to have known him. I'm proud to have worked with him. And because of his, and I think in some part, some of my efforts, this community is a great place to live. It's a wonderful place to raise your family. Must be because people clamor to come here. They come up here and go to school and stay. Sometimes we wish they'd go back to Miami, but they come here, go to school, and they stay. They make this their home. So there's got to be something good about this place, and I'd like to think I have a little part in making it a great place.
Well, you did come under a little bit of flack from some quarters there when you added Jack to the mix there at the office, Jack being, of course, Larry's boy and all that. So you see, you chose her in collusion and all that, but I remember talking to you about that before. That was a very much a meritocracy situation. You saw something in that young man that would make him a good prosecutor in your estimation.
Oh, absolutely. I'm telling you, most of the lawyers in the office, and I'm going to say most, I'd probably say 35 out of the 42 are a lot smarter than I am. And Jack is a very smart lawyer. He's a good thinker. He thinks well on his feet. Now, he does it different from how I do. I have walked around for 39 years as an assistant and as state attorney. When I go to trial, I have a legal pad and a pen and a couple of colored inks so I can make notes. And Jack goes to trial with an iPad. I don't have one, so I think it's what it's called, an iPad. And he has his whole case in that iPad. I would never be able to do that, but he can, and he does. And a lot of our lawyers do that way today. But again, that's not to say that mine was wrong and his is right. This is how you have to do it. But I just found Jack to be a very smart, quick on his feet. And like he's like everyone else too. I don't think any time I've ever got done with a trial that I didn't come up and say, "Well, I wish I had done this." Well, whether you have a legal pad or an iPad, you're going to do that. I wish I'd argued something else. If you win, you kind of let that pass pretty quick. If you lose, then you really do. Well, if I'd done this, if I'd done that, and that'll make you old. It really will. But Jack's got a lot of energy. He's enthusiastic. Only negative thing I'll say about Jack is he does have a little bit of his daddy's temperament in him, and he will go after you.
Well, I remember, and this is you were much closer to him certainly than I was, covering law enforcement and the sheriff's office back in the day when Larry Campbell was undersheriff to Eddie Boone. We in the media were terrified of Larry Campbell. The standard wisdom was, this is a man with ice water in his veins. We covered a lot of cases that he was involved with as the lead law enforcement officer, and he could be a very scary guy. When he became sheriff, it was remarkable the transition in personality he had. Yeah, there was still the old hard-nosed Larry Campbell there, particularly before his bout with lung cancer. However, he became a virtual teddy bear in comparison to what he had been before.
Well, you know, that's true. And you know, Larry was one of these guys that had to fight and scrap for just about everything he got, too. And I think Jack has followed in those footsteps. I remember we had a hostage standoff situation and shots were being fired. When the shots started being fired, everybody ducked and went for cover except Larry Campbell. He was looking to try to see where they were coming from. And that's the bravery that he had, and that's who he was. I remember when he was working as a jailer at the jail, and Larry always had kind of a baby face. And, we'd take people who were intoxicated. Back then, you used to take intoxicated people to jail. Now we take them to detox, which is not, that's a good thing as long as they're not hurting anyone. But sometimes these drunks would be in the jail and they'd say, there ain't no boy going to put me in jail. Well, that would bring on further discussion. And so Larry had to do a lot of scrapping because he did have that boyish baby face, and it just created some problems. But never afraid. I mean, I've never seen him fearful. Now, he may have been, but—
You never saw it.
He was a man of great courage. I have a little plaque on my in my office that shows the John Wayne syndrome thing, but it's courage is getting bucked off and saddling up, you know. And that was Larry.
Willie Meigs is our guest here on Perspectives Today, the outgoing state attorney for Florida's 2nd Judicial Circuit. Always happy to hear from you at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 or email us, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives with Willie Meigs here. What's going to be the first thing once you get out of office there in just a little bit?
Well, my wife told me that I've got to get out of the house till about 10 or 11 because she's not going to have me underfoot in the house. I got to find me a breakfast club to go to or something somewhere. Maybe she'll let me sit on the porch. I don't know.
Well, I'm thinking old Manny Joannis, now that he lost the election there for county commission, maybe he'll open a restaurant again, you think?
Right. Well, maybe so. I'll find me something to do, but I have a lot to do. I'm kind of looking forward to a little different lifestyle.
Well, before we go back to the phones, we were talking about your relationship with the late Larry Campbell, former sheriff of Leon County. You also worked out an interesting dynamic with Nancy Daniels, who's also going to be stepping down out of her position here in just a little bit. Normally, you think prosecutor, state attorney, they're at each other's throats and they're fussing and fuming at each other in the courtroom. But that wasn't the deal with you and Nancy.
Well, you know, I'd like to say, you know, Nancy always meant well, and I felt led to help her along the way. But no, Nancy Daniels is a good lawyer. She was easy to work with, and we did communicate quite a bit if we had problems between our office. And we do. Sometimes we'll have, you know, our court system now, we generally pair lawyers with one another. And so she has us pretty much matched in each court, and our lawyers are matched. Sometimes two lawyers just can't get along. And so we could fuss about it, and we'd switch them around to get them to, you know, to work it out. And so we've had interesting times. But Nancy has been a pleasure to work with, and I wish her the absolute best in her retirement, too. So,
yeah, originally she was going to be sitting in with us today. She has a very dear friend who is undergoing cancer surgery down at Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa today. So she was not able to join us. Perhaps at some future point we'll get her in here. But I did notice a number of situations, Willie, in which your office and Nancy Daniels' office worked together to try to, instead of put people in jail, keep them out of jail when it came to juveniles and nonviolent drug offenses and mental health folks and that sort of thing, which was, again, very innovative at the time. It's kind of taken for granted now, but I've seen both sides work together in the courtroom to say, how do we keep someone out of the system?
Well, absolutely. And you know, there are a lot of things that I'm real proud of that we've done. And it was kind of interesting in this last campaign, they're talking about having some type of diversion program for minor offenders. Well, gosh, I don't know why we didn't think of that. We've only been doing it for 25 years. And but one of the things that I was able to work out with Nancy, and it works so very well, and real quickly I'll kind of go through it. If you know how to evaluate a case, there are many cases you look at them and say, this is a case that called for probation, and that's going to be the end result, and you know it. And the other side knows it. Well, now, why do we keep that case lingering in the system, taking it down to the court and having a case management and dragging it around? So we formed this thing, you know, it's called an early case resolution. Nancy got some of her good lawyers that could evaluate a case. I got good lawyers that can evaluate a case. And so we work it out, and we're knocking out 40% of the felony cases in Leon County, 40% within 45 days with one court appearance. Well, now that saves court time. And I had the cooperation of the judges. They give us a judge. And so we know how we're going to resolve it. We know what the resolution is going to be the day we file it. We tell the defense attorney. They go tell the defendant. And we go in and we do it. And some people recognize, even in this early case resolution, you're going to prison. You got to go to prison, okay? But this is how long you're going to go. Now, it could be longer if you go to trial, if we have to fight and argue and do all these things. If you want to go ahead and belly up and take your punishment and go do it, we can do it in 30 days and you're out of here. Or we can fight and fuss and scrap, and then you'll likely go to prison a year and a half from now. And the case goes up and down the stairs to the courtroom many times. So I'm just real pleased with that. And that would not work without Nancy Daniels and her lawyers. And, of course, private lawyers know it too, but she handles the bulk of the felony caseload in the circuit court.
Seems to make a lot of sense given the economy that has been enforced sometimes by the Florida legislature when it comes to the judicial system. Those bucks are hard to find.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, she has in our division, got Owen McCall and Wade White, and it's coming around. It'll come around. but you know, they have a lot of experience, and Nancy has Mike Corin, and Mike's been around. He was around when I started. And he does a great job. He knows how to talk to a defendant, and he knows what a case is worth. And we just work out so many of those things. And that saves taxpayer money, saves time, saves, you know, in other words, if we didn't have that, if a lawyer has 10 cases today, he'd have 14.
Time is money. Time is money. Bill's on line one. Let's add him to the conversation here on Perspectives. Hey, Bill. Hello, Bill. Let's see. Bill wanted to know if you could identify the deputy sheriff in the 60s who used to race up and down Tennessee Street while eluding other deputies. Does that ring a bell, Willie?
I'm not going to confess to any of my misdeeds. I will have to tell you. And I wouldn't mind telling anybody this. We were just kind of joking about it. I remember we'd be answering a call. We used to drive when I was a deputy sheriff. We drove. You know, I'd burn up sometimes two tanks of gas a day because there wasn't but two of us on duty and most of the time. And we'd go pretty fast to our calls. And I remember Harry Chairs and I were going out West Tennessee Street, and we got to that big curve as you get west of Ocala Road. And we're going pretty fast side by side, and we were both of us about to lose it, and he kept inching over toward me. And, of course, I don't know why. Should have been driving with both hands on the wheel, but I get my rail. I get off of me, Harry. Get off of me, Harry. Neither one of us going to give up an inch. So, we used to go pretty fast.
The Tennessee Street 400. There we go. David's online too. Hi, David. Welcome to Perspectives.
Yes, I'd like to congratulate Willie on his fine career and say that it's been a pleasure for me to get to know you and some of your family. I'm a retired dermatologist, and I just want to make it clear to everyone that our many encounters all occurred in my office and not yours.
And I appreciate you very much, sir.
Well, congratulations.
And I'm not going to say I miss seeing you as much as I used to.
Well, I have a strange feeling, though. Now, we talked about horsey things and retirement and all that, Willie, but I have a feeling you're just not going to kick back and let life wash over you. You got some plans coming up, don't you?
I really do. I have gotten involved with the Triple R Horse Rescue, and I've rescued a couple. I've become a foster parent to a couple of horses, two horses so far. And there's a young man. He's not a young man. He's a good gentleman, but he is what I would call a horse whisperer. And he volunteers a lot of his time working with these abused animals. And so he came out, and he's been kind of teaching me how to do the, for lack of a better word, the horse whispering techniques. I've had horses for 50 years, never done anything right with them in the whole 50 years. And he's teaching me, and I'm going to go ride with him. And as he goes around to these other abused horses and watch him work and learn from him and try to become that myself.
Well,
and,
that is why I can't. You know what we'll have to do in a couple years, maybe? Come back and talk about that. I would love to know what those techniques would be, because they can be some of the most cantankerous critters on the planet.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just a simple thing that I've learned is you can make a horse back up by simply moving your finger back and forth if you do it right.
If you do it right.
And it's just a signal. It's just communication. But there's a technique. It's all pressure release, you know, and the horse behaves miraculously. And usually what I would do is get a board or something. But I have learned since I've broken 9 ribs now with horses and my back in a couple of places, I have learned that I cannot ride a bucking horse anymore. But when I was younger, I'd get a saddle on him. If I could get on him, I could ride him. But we're not going to do it that way anymore. There's another way.
There's a better way. Yes, indeed. Kathy joins us here on Perspectives. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi, Willie. It's Kathy Combs.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I just want to thank you for being such a good man. You know, Rick has worked with you since you became the state attorney. And I was wondering which one of y'all was going to get the jump on the retirement, but it looks like both of you are going at the same time.
Well, you know, he's the only person in the office older than me, you know. But I love Rick to death, and you too, and your children. And that's one of the things about our office is I say we're a family. I can also say we're sometimes a dysfunctional family, but we are family. And you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us.
Well, having, you said, more or less 42 attorneys there to deal with, and sports staff and all that there, that's a considerable number of folks in an office.
It is. It is.
And not like
Thank you, Kathy.
Now, not like the old days at the old courthouse, I'm thinking. That was a considerably, shall we say, more modest office situation than what you have now.
Yeah, well, and of course, the county has been very good to us. We have great offices on the fourth floor of the courthouse, and we're all under the same roof in the same building, because we have been in 3 or 4 different buildings at the time and different floors. So this is really good.
Well, looking ahead, we continue to grow as a community, and this area of Florida, given the congestion in Central and South Florida, we see more and more folks that are kind of making that Northwood haul and coming up to our part of the world. That also means larger caseloads for the state attorney's office in the future.
Well, yeah, it's heavy enough now, our folks work really, really hard. I sometimes go down to the office because I forgot something and I have to go back on a Saturday or after hours. And generally every time I go down there, there's somebody down there working on a Sunday afternoon or a Saturday afternoon, getting prepared for Monday, because we really cannot get it prepared, properly. And you know, that's something I hope I've instilled in most of our folks is when they hit that courtroom, they need to be prepared. And I have a lot of people when I hit the courtroom, memories just kind of flood back in. You know, we used to go to docket sounding and we'll say, state's ready for trial. Judge Rudd knew we weren't ready for trial. He'd say, well, what you really mean is you'll get ready for trial over the weekend. Well, yeah, we're ready to go. You bring it on.
Did you have any it's difficult now. Not with the current lineup here. We don't want to speak ill of the living, but if any of the former judges that you work with, Willie, do you think, boy, there was a jurist, there was a—
Oh, yeah, yeah. Many of them are just totally my heroes. Judge Rudd was one. Judge Willis was one. Judge Guy McCord was one. That they were the old line judges. I'm trying to think of one other one's name. He was mean as a snake, but he was a good judge, and he'd chew everybody in the courtroom out. He was equal. He'd get the defense, the state, and generally got yelled at. My wife used to come up when I was trying a case for Judge Willis, and I'd say, "Now, honey, don't get upset, because somewhere during the course of the day, he's probably gonna yell at me." And he'd get his face real red, and he'll just growl at me and yell at me. It's okay. He's going to do that. and he'll laugh about it later, but he's going to do that. So I love Judge Willis. Judge Minor, and, of course, everyone I've named so far is now deceased, but those were great judges, and they were great friends. All of them wrote letters to help me get in law school.
Aww.
Because I testified in front of them as officers a lot, and I still have those letters. I have a letter from every one of them.
I remember Charlie Minor writing plays, and you'd go back in his chambers there, and he'd want to read his newest opus to you as you were sitting there trying to interview him about a particular case.
Judge Minor was a unique person.
Yes, he was. He was indeed. Anything you do over? Of course, we all have do-overs in our life that we'd love to do, but just any particular one you're thinking of, Willie, man, I should have done that.
Well, you know, I won't— I hope I've led my life in such a fashion that I really don't have any of those. The mistakes I've made have made me a better person sometimes. I don't think I would be where I am without making some of those mistakes. I've probably hurt people. I've never intentionally hurt anyone, but I probably lost friends over situations trying to be fair. But I'd do it. Pretty much the same way. I don't think I'd change very much.
There's not much more you can say about a life than when you say, you know, that was not too bad. We did a decent job on that.
Well, you know, I do take being a good old boy as a compliment. I know it was not intended as one, but I take it as a compliment.
And anymore, not too many good old boys left in this part of the world. As we said at the outset, times have changed a lot.
They have. Well, and I like characters. You know, goodness knows I have run into some characters over the last 50 years that I've been in this business. I started in 1965, and I have met many a character, and I remember so many of them.
Well, one other thing here, in the moment that we have remaining, because this is outside of the constitutional thing, but there is literally a new sheriff in town. How do you think Walt McNeil's going to do now, moving from TPD, Quincy— Now back over to Leon County as sheriff now.
Well, I think one of the first lessons he's going to learn pretty quickly is there is no city hall. He does not have a supervisor. He doesn't have anybody he can go to because the buck will stop with him. He doesn't have to go get approval to do something. And there's nobody going to disapprove of what he's done. Nobody's going to lecture him. So he will be totally, as the constitutional officer of this county, in charge of law enforcement, and he'll have nobody else to go to. So he'll have to make some decisions. I know as the chief, the city manager was his boss. He'll find out real quick as sheriff, I'm his boss, and you're his boss, and any other citizen that walks in that door is his boss.
There's going to be some interesting changes in the dynamic within this county and this region in the years to come. And Willie, we're going to miss you. We really are.
Well, I'm going to miss being there. I'm I'll have to walk down to the driveway and get the paper and see if I need to call anybody.
And then go whisper to some horses.
There you go.
Willie Meigs, thanks so much for coming on Perspectives today.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it very much. Time really flies.
It do indeed. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls behind the glass doing their thing today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Leon County has a whole new mechanism in place for pushing economic development and entrepreneurship. We'll talk about it next week right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.